Hey there, it's Dr. Stacey Cordovano. I want veterinarians to learn to be happier, healthier, wealthier, and more grateful for the life that we've created. On this podcast, I will speak with outside-of-the-box thinkers to hear new ideas on ways to improve our day-to-day life. Welcome to The Whole Veterinarian. Today, I get to speak with two amazingly fun ladies who are collaborating to provide new grads with an awesome community of support and mentorship. Drs. Melanie Bowden and Kirsten Rundgren have teamed up to create Advanced Vets Academy, a 12-month program that teaches veterinarians all the things they wish they knew at graduation and didn't have to learn the hard way. From atopic dermatitis to bulletproof communication skills, this is definitely not a rehash of what you learned in vet school. They are 2015 and 2016 graduates of Washington State University College of Vet Medicine, and they are passionate about making veterinary careers sustainable and fulfilling. Here's a quick word from our awesome sponsor, and then please enjoy my chat with Melanie and Kirsten. Questions about finances? Vincere Wealth Management is the solution. Isaiah Douglas is a partner of Vincere Wealth Management and the host of the Veterinarian Success Podcast. He is a fee-only certified financial planner, and he and the Vincere team are dedicated to serving veterinarians in all stages of their careers. Vincere can assist you whether you are a new graduate getting started or an experienced vet trying to navigate selling your clinic and moving into retirement. You have enough stress in your life. Finances no longer need to be on that list. You can find a link to download their free resource called A Financial Guide for Veterinarians on my website at thewholeveterinarian.com/resources. Thanks again to Isaiah and Vincere Wealth Management for their support, and now enjoy the show. I'm sitting down with Dr. Melanie Bowden and Dr. Kirsten Rundgren, and I'm so excited to chat with you guys today. Thanks for joining me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for having us, Stacey.
So I know you guys as True North DVM and Vet Redefined from Instagram. Thank you to the Vetstagram for connecting us, where you guys share awesome content. It's super educational, super inspirational, and I learn a ton from you guys, but I want to know, and I want listeners to know a little bit more about you. So can you introduce yourselves?
You go first.
Okay. I'll go first. Cool. So I'm Melanie Bowden. Dr. Bowden is my superpower. I always tell people, like, outside of veterinary medicine, I'm just Melanie. But I grew up in Maine and went westward for vet school. I went to WSU, graduated in 2016, and do small animal medicine. And I originally did, like, regular GP practice. I worked for Banfield and then for a mom and pop practice where I was medical director. And I just never found my unicorn practice that, like, I really felt supported me as a person, and had a lot of struggles with burnout and feeling overwhelmed and work-life balance, as a lot of us struggle with. And so 2019 for me was a big disruptor year, and I quit my job and took some time to work relief. And I did that mostly to give myself space to be able to think more critically about, like, how is veterinary medicine and my life going to play well together? Because I wanted both, but the way that they were mashing up at the time was destructive to both being successful. And so now I've relocated back home to the state of Maine, and I'm working in ER practice, and I'm really enjoying the work that I'm doing. It's something I never thought that I would ever be doing. If you asked me in vet school, I would have told you that the thing that freaked me out the most was something coming in that was actively dying. And now that's, like, my game. Stay open-minded, friends. You never know where your life will go.
Good advice.
Yeah, when I'm not being a vet, I'm a big-time hiker and backpacker, and I love spending time with friends and family out on the lake, and now that I'm back near an ocean again, out on the ocean, and I love just spending any time that gets me outdoors in nature. It's my jam.
Great. Thank you.
All right. I guess that means it's my turn. I am Kirsten Rundgren. I'm also a Washington State University grad. I graduated from WSU the year before Mel, so I'm a 2015, but I'm also a born and raised Washington State kid. So I grew up in Washington. All my family is still there. I went to WSU for undergrad as well. So both my parents went to school at WSU, as did my sister and my aunt and my grandmother. So we've got a big family of cougs. So I never wanted to go anywhere else. I went to WSU with the intention that I was going to undergrad and going to vet school there. And I wasn't going to take no for an answer. So I was like, that person. So, but we still are big Pac-12 football people. So, one of the biggest things that I was worried about when we moved to the UK, which I will come back to, is how was I going to be able to watch American college football? And my fiance has rigged the internet. So we have a server here that I can like watch all of our American TV and I can watch it live. Thank God. So I am also a small animal veterinarian. I have been exclusively general practice. I still have a fear in my body of anything coming in actively dying. So I send that to Mel. I'm like, you're going to have to go somewhere else that's not here. My crazy reshuffling year was also 2019. So Mel and I kind of had separate job crises and then kind of came together afterwards. And that was that I was very burnt out. I know that's kind of a generalized term, but for me that looked like, and I know we'll probably kind of dig into it more, but there was just not a lot of separation between work and not work. And I was like, why am I doing this? I don't know why I'm being a vet. I don't know what I'm doing. And that was actually the year that I took a teaching job. So I started teaching part-time at a veterinary technician program and kind of remembered why I like doing what I'm doing. I really like teaching. I love learning and I love medicine. And so I really like putting that out there for other people. And so that was when I kind of started shifting and realizing there's lots of things that you can do with our degree. And that was actually down in San Diego. And then I have now relocated to the United Kingdom. So I'm actually in Southwest England with my fiance and all of our animals because he is from here and wanted to come home. So here I am living in another country. Never thought that was going to happen and practicing over here and doing all sorts of stuff. So it's been interesting. My British accent is not very good, but we'll work on that.
Maybe we'll make you test that out at the end of this conversation.
Yeah, maybe not. I might embarrass Andrew.
I love both of your stories. I think they're awesome examples of how versatile our profession is, how things aren't going to go the way you planned and kind of rolling with the punches, but also creating what you want for yourself is so important in this profession. Okay. So I think before we get into the meat and potatoes of this talk, I wanted to ask you two separate questions. So Kirsten, your mom is a small animal practitioner. She has her own clinic and she's GP, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how does that affect you as you are kind of bouncing along a different trajectory in your in your vet med career?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a big question. I always thought that I was going to be a general practitioner until I was crusty and old. I grew up in the clinic. My mom is an absolutely phenomenal veterinarian. She was an associate for the majority of her career, part-time. And my dad's a pharmacist, so he was very, very busy with work as well. So I had two medical parents, you know, growing up, and I spent a lot of time in those scenarios and I loved it. And I always thought that that's what I was going to do too. I was like, I'm built for that. I love it. I'm good at it. I have good communication skills. I really enjoy educating people, period, including clients. And so I was like, that's what I'm going to do until I'm 1,000 years old. And people always said, oh, did you just want to be a vet because your mom was a vet? And that question kind of always came to me in two forms. I thought one of it was just like, that's so great. That's so cool that you grew up and you like got this, like part of your passion is from your mom, and absolutely true. But I also kind of got it a lot from like family members. Like I remember my grandpa said, are you sure that's what you want to do? Are you sure that's what you want to do? And I always like kind of took that personally. Like, don't you think I'm a strong enough person to like know what I want to do on my own without being influenced by other people? And I think that I just kind of assumed that that's what I would always do because that's what I grew up with. And that was my first love in medicine. And when I got, you know, 3-4 years out of school and I had been working in very busy clinics, I'm very clinic monogamous. Like I worked at like the same two clinics in Washington my first 3 years, the same clinic in San Diego the 3 years that I was there. And now I've just started locuming a little bit over here. I'm scheduled at the same clinic through July and nowhere else. So like, I'm like living the locum life, but I'm like, the same way. So I think like once I got to that kind of year four and I was really struggling with the lack of boundaries and I was putting work above everything else. And Andrew too, it wasn't just me. It was a combination of both of us because my fiance is an equine surgeon. And so he, after his residency and after he got boarded, you know, we were down in San Diego and he was working at a busy clinic. And so work was our life and we don't have kids yet. So it's like, okay, you know, dogs might go to work with Andrew, cats at home, being a beezy, doing her cat thing. And so like, we didn't have kids to run home to. And that really, I think that really just drug us across the gravel pretty hard the couple of years we were in San Diego and we loved it. But I just started having this kind of like crisis of like, this cannot be it. I cannot do this for 40 more years because I am just getting plowed over. And that's another thing that we could probably have 10 more podcast episodes about. But that I think was a challenging thing for me because I'm like, my mom did this. I always thought that my mom and I butt heads because I was a daddy's girl and I am a daddy's girl for sure still at 31. But then I realized that my mom and I butt heads so much because we are the same person. And I was like, God, my mom did it. Why am I having so much trouble? And there was a lot of crying and a lot of personal development, a lot of talking to friends, colleagues, like, you know, Mel and I were friends in vet school, but we weren't like together all the time. And I really don't think that our relationship got to where it is now until after we were out of school. So going through these things together and like reconnecting during COVID and, you know, things like that, I just kind of realized like, it's okay for that to be different. And I had a lot of shame and a lot of guilt associated with like, cause I just thought like, I can't do it. Like, I just can't hack it. But it wasn't necessarily that it wasn't that I was really freaking good at my job, but it just wasn't making me happy anymore doing just that. And so that was extremely challenging and it's been a good thing for me now, but it was really hard there. Like I said, there was a lot of crying, a lot of not sleeping, a lot of Andrew probably being like, oh my God, I have to spend the rest of my life with you. And I'm like, why?
I asked that because I assumed it was hard. Like, I think that's a hard transition for anyone to decide that they're not going to do maybe as traditional or what they thought they were going to do when they were 5 years old. So I was curious because I figured that probably added a whole layer. And I mean, I think it's amazing that you've worked or are working your way through that.
Sure.
Okay. So Melanie, my question for you is, people may or may not know, but you had a very successful TED Talk called What Being a Veterinarian Really Takes. And my question is, how do you even, like, how does that become a thing? How do you have the nerve to do that? Like, I'm just really curious because it was amazing. And like, thank you for doing it. But
well, thank you.
It was a big leap, I feel like.
Oh, it was a super big leap. As composed as I am on stage, I'm a nervous giggler and I giggle a lot during that. I also had laryngitis for 5 days afterwards because my mouth was so dry. And there's a couple of times, so like if you listen really closely, like knowing myself and watching it back, most awkward thing you ever do.
Oh, sure.
I hear myself go as I'm like trying to swallow because my mouth was so dry. Like I literally couldn't talk for the next 5 days. So I was very nervous. Don't let anybody fool you. I think this is one of the things that Kirsten and I really connected on too. And like finding like a soul sister in vet med is like both of us really respected each other and really looked up to each other as a role model. And then to find that we both were in this moment of crisis, I think both of us were like, oh, it's okay. I can give myself permission to be human because here's this person who I think is a superhuman that I want to be more like, and they have the same challenges I do. And that's like the biggest thing that's come out of me for the TED Talk is the amount of veterinarians who have reached out just being like, thank you for giving me a voice. Thank you for making me realize that this is normal, that I'm not weak. Like what Kirsten was saying, like, I'm not weak. I'm not defective. I'm not bad. I'm not failing. This is just hard. And I have options. And just having that normalization, I think, has been helpful for a lot of veterinarians, or at least that's the messaging I get from people watching it.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. But how it came to be. So TED does local events called TEDx. So they were hosting one where I was living in Coeur d'Alene. And one of my friends, it was like a friend of a friend thing, right? So I had recently ended a relationship of like 7 years with my partner and quit my job. And I went out for drinks with a friend who was also having a rough week. And we were like, okay, we both need to get decompressed, but we're putting a timeline on this because this is supposed to be a fun night. And like, we're not going to make it all about the sad, soppy stuff that's happening in our lives. We're going to do other things, but let's just like decompress, get it out there and like move on. Right.
What? You mean so vets are going to go out for a drink and talk about something that's not veterinary medicine?
That was the goal.
That seems very strange.
Well, this is not a veterinary friend. This is not
That's the only reason.
This is not a veterinary. So, and it had been a rough week at like work. Like it was like wrapping up. Like I had just given notice. It had been a rough week at work. And so I was like, all right, you get 15 minutes to talk about your stuff. I'm going to get 15 minutes and then we're going to like move on and have a good night. And so he did his debrief and I, you know, listened to him and he's like, all right, so tell me about your day. And so I started telling him about my day at work and I was just like, oh, you wouldn't believe like I came in and like this dog had been dropped off for a dental, but it was like bleeding from its gums and like lateral. And the client like didn't even realize that it was in this crisis situation. He was just like, yeah, I think his teeth really hurt. He hasn't eaten in 2 days. I was like, how do you not even know? And then I had this puppy visit that was like, the person was like freaking out. And then my practice manager came and was like up my butt about something that I'd forgotten to charge for the other day. And like this, that, and the other thing. And goes, wow, that's really challenging. I was like, oh no, I haven't even gotten to the part yet. I'm just setting the context in which the bad thing happened. And he was like, what? I was like, yeah, that's all normal. But this is what happened that was bad. And he was like, that's not normal. He's like, that's what your day's like. That's what every day is like. And I was just like, yeah, this is what it's like to be a veterinarian. He's like, general public doesn't know this. Like, I had no idea. And he's like, I've been your friend for 4 years. And I had no idea that this is what work was like for you. And so he was the one out of that conversation at a bar that he was like, I know this person who's putting on the TEDx event. And I think you should talk about it. Like they're looking to focus. This particular TEDx event was called Uncomfortably Comfortable or Comfortably mm-hmm. Uncomfortable, something like that. Anyways, it's in the beginning of the talk. And the focus was meant to be on mental health awareness and how do we be, you know, better humans and talking about like tougher taboo subjects. And they already had a speaker that was going to be talking about. So in Coeur d'Alene, the principal of the high school in 2018 committed suicide. And so his widow was going to talk about that experience. And he was like, I think that your talk would pair well with it because she's talking about a single individual, then how they got to that point. And you're talking about a group of people and how the environment can impact mental health and well-being. And so I sat on it for a while because I was like, I kind of understood what it could mean to do this, that like suddenly I become the voice for this platform. And I didn't feel comfortable with that. I was like, I can't speak for all veterinarians. Like I'm one person. And, you know, I mean, I think I'm pretty average, like my experience and like, I don't do anything like exceptional. We all deal with the same crap. You know, I didn't really feel comfortable speaking on behalf of like our industry. Mm-hmm. And so I spent some time talking to some friends and said, you know, if you had this opportunity, you had this platform, what would you choose to focus on? What would you want to talk about? Like, what would you want non-veterinarians to know? Because that was really the platform, was like most of the people in the audience were not going to be people in the veterinary industry. And so out of that, I started kind of brainstorming and went back and actually you have to audition. So then I ended up going back and auditioning and then kind of honed the talk over 2 to 3 months. And you work with a speech and coach. Yes. And then you do the event, and if it gets enough traction, then TED, the larger organization, picks it up. And that's what happened with mine, was that there was enough interest in it that the larger organization started promoting it. So yeah, if you ever have interest in either attending or, you know, potentially participating in them, TEDx events happen all over the country. They're really accessible. They're not expensive to go to. And it's just fun to connect with other community members and see what other people in your community are passionate about and trying to accomplish. Yeah, all the talks that day were fantastic. And I made so many good community, like just local community connections with other like people that are trying to make the world a better place. So
that's awesome. I actually think the beauty of your talk was that it was your perspective and it is just, you know, an average day. Like you're not a mental health specialist. It's just like, that's what we all have to deal with. So yeah thanks again for getting the balls to do that. Okay. So we've talked about a little bit about your stories, a little bit about periods of burnout, not thriving in parts of our careers. I think let's dig into a couple of things that you wish you had known before you started practice and how that might have helped you in your career thus far.
Ooh, that's another good one. Well, one, I will full disclosure, Mel and I have cheated and talked about this already. So I think that both of us very much agree that probably one of our top things among many is that we wish that we would have known a little bit better about how to set boundaries, because that is something that I think both of us really struggled with. I think early on, we kind of, you know, Mel and I are both kind of type A, OCD, high functioning people. And so we kind of came out the gate like balls to the wall, ready to go and, you know, do it all. And you can only do that for so long before it catches up to you. And so I think one of the things that we talk about often that we wish we would have known sooner is how to cultivate those boundaries between work and non-work. And that can be said for so many facets of our career, right? It's not just like, I go home on time. It's so much more complicated than that. And I don't think that you really necessarily realize it until you're kind of in the trenches, but that is something that even, I will tell you, even growing up in a vet clinic, literally watching my mom bust her, or is there cursing? Do you beep out the cursing? This is the first time I've ever made it this long without swearing.
I haven't had an explicit episode yet, so I might bleep out the cursing.
Okay, I will say that this may be the first podcast and the only podcast I will ever do without. I was busting her butt, and I still did not realize how hard it was to separate work and home. And I mean, she had two small kids at home. And I don't have kids yet. Like Andrew and I are like, ooh, children, like sticky.
they are.
Yeah. And so like I even watched it firsthand and I still was not prepared for that. And I think that it takes some time. I am never going to tell you that you're going to automatically go out and be like 100% ready, because I think that that's baloney. But like, I think that some of it would have been nice to like be more accurately prepared for like the demands that are placed. And this goes down the rabbit hole of like changing the entire veterinarian practice culture. Like it's not normal to stay at work 4 hours after you're done, 4 hours after the clinic closes. Like that's not okay. Mm-hmm. And yet here we all are. And I mean, when I was in San Diego, I would regularly stay 2 to 3 hours. We closed at 6 and I would literally be there till 8:30. Calling people, finishing records, doing stuff. And it's because you're so freaking jam packed during the day. And with the amount of communication that I do with my clients, I just wasn't getting enough done. And so I think that being able to recognize that and set those boundaries, like people would say, oh, so-and-so called and wants to come in for XYZ, instead of being like, yeah, come in. I'd be like, no, they cannot come. If it's not an emergency, they can be scheduled with me tomorrow. They can go to the emergency clinic around. I was fortunate that I was in an area where there's emergency clinics close by. I was like, I physically cannot see this patient and provide appropriate medical care with the amount of other patients that I'm seeing right now. But I never would have said no. I'd have been like, yeah, come in. And it's so easy to just get into that kind of like, I'm going to stay late. I'm going to get my stuff done. And I don't think I realized how hard I was making it until Andrew and I realized that we literally weren't even enjoying living in like one of the most beautiful places on the world. Like we weren't even enjoying living in Southern California because we were so tired from work when we weren't working that we like weren't going anywhere. Like we weren't doing anything. We lived in San Diego for 3 years. We did not go to Disneyland one time, not once. We did not make it to Yosemite. There was so many things that were like, how did we live in San Diego for 3 years and never make it to do those things? And a lot of it was because of the habits that we like built around work.
So you think that's like a mix of both the person and then the practice culture, right? Like, because you can't be the only one in a practice saying, oh no, I'm not going to see that, when all the other doctors or like management expects you to see that, right? So it has to be some sort of.
Yeah, no, totally. Up. And that's like, and Mel, actually, I was going to say Mel probably has some things to add to this because she and I have had this conversation many times. Like I said, it's very complicated. This is obviously a very like shortened and condensed version of things, but I'll let my sister take it away on this one.
No, I agree with what you're saying, Stacey, that it is a culture problem, right? That if veterinarians are practicing very different types of medicine, then you start getting doctor preferences, right? Of like, I want to see the cheap doctor because there's a different standard of care perhaps between the two. Or, you know, I like to see so-and-so because they make themselves endlessly available. The thing that I learned in setting boundaries and that you don't have to be everything to everyone is, one, that doesn't make you a bad veterinarian. So I think there's a lot of like internal expectation or talk that we have of ourselves that just goes on between our own two ears around like what it means to be a good veterinarian. And somehow I'm a bad veterinarian if I don't see every single person that calls or like whatever, or answer every email the same day or try to go the extra mile to help my team every single time. I very much thought that there was going to be because this is like my cultural orientation to the world with my family and stuff was, I was like, I very much thought there was going to be like, you scratch my back, I scratch your back type like reciprocity in practice. And I did not find that. People would call out last minute and like text me and be like, hey, could you come in? And I'd be like, sure. Like, I get it. Like, we all have stuff that happens. And especially being like the single person with no kids, there was like this expectation that, well, Melanie can do it because she doesn't have anything to go home to. And you shouldn't have kids as an excuse. Like, kids shouldn't have to be an excuse to get out on time or to say like, I have to get to something that's important to me. Like,
sure.
My dogs are important to me and they're in a kennel for 12 hours a day in private practice. Like, I wanted to get home, let them out. But I do think that part of what I found was that I thought that my bosses had certain expectations for me and they didn't. When I finally like got to the point where I had enough balls and enough anger and enough frustration, and enough burnout to bring it up and be like, this isn't working. We need to stop doing this. And they were like, we never wanted you doing that. We end up having to pay overtime for people when they stay late. Like, we'd rather you refer it to the ER clinic. And for 2 years, I'd been staying late to see stuff that came in at like 6:55 when we closed at 7. So I think that communication is really important when you start setting boundaries, to be very specific in expectations and to ask those questions. And I think a lot of times we just make assumptions and we don't actually verify that the expectations that we're trying to live into are actually correct. For me, that's like step one in setting boundaries, is like review the expectations and make sure that they actually are true. And then if they really don't work for you, let's have a conversation about what the actual goal is for the practice versus the workflow that's probably making it a problem. That's what I found with setting boundaries in practice, is that it's not about like, oh, I need to have decreased caseload or I need to not do parts of my job. It's more about like, how can we flex this so that I can have my cake and eat it too? And so sometimes that's like, can I get remote access to do records on days that I'm home late? Like, we all have days, right? And so like, I understand there's some days that I'm going to stay late to do records, but like, could I have remote access so I could do them from home, so I can get home and like have dinner with my partner or whatever? And then, when they go to bed, I can stay up and do some records. Or like Kirsten's saying, like, if it's not an actual emergency, schedule an appointment to talk with me. Like, I don't have to give you free information over the phone when it's really my knowledge and information that you're paying for. Like, if I continue to do free consults over the phone all the time, they're never going to come in and pay for veterinary care. And the end goal is to give that pet better health and well-being. And I can't do that if they never come into my practice. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to change the way we think about saying no, and that it's not us being unreasonable. It's trying to find something that's more workable. Like, what is possible in this situation?
Yeah.
And I think it was Tanasia that Dr. Crocker had just posted something recently about getting good at saying no and getting comfortable with saying no. And I texted her and I was like, saying no is my favorite. And it's not that you're saying no to everything. It's just figuring out how to say no in the right way.
Yeah.
That is constructive as opposed to being like a shutdown. And I think that that's really hard to get good at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the idea of no and, right? No, unfortunately, I can't do what you're asking of me. And I recognize this is really important to you. Let's figure out how we can get it done. And being able to move through that to find something that's a win-win for both parties. Because usually there is.
Yeah.
And the other thing I picked up from that is that there can be a communication failure on both parts, right? Like, the bosses and management are like, ugh, we're paying overtime. And like, here she is staying, and they are not saying anything to you about that. Right. And then you're there like resenting that you think they want, and you're not communicating that. So, another huge topic to go down.
Well, that kind of plays into like the other topic that Mel and I were like, oh, if we talk about one or two things, these are the things we want to talk about.
We wish we knew
is the importance of communication. And I think that kind of plays into the boundary setting thing, because I'm a total geek and guru and like, just like obsessed with communication. And I know that I think it gets poo-pooed a little bit as like a soft skill, but I will tell every single like clinical student, new graduate that I talk to is like, you can be a great medicine clinician. You can be a great surgeon. You can learn all that stuff. You're not going to be doing any of that cool stuff if you cannot communicate appropriately with your team and your clients. If you cannot portray the value and adequately explain and all of that, you are not going to be doing any of that stuff. You're not going to be able to do any of the medical stuff if you can't communicate. But it's communicating with all the parties, because it's just, it's like you said, like boss management to DVM to doctor, but also to support staff, to technicians, to reception. And that's where I found that there was a lot of a challenge for me. And one of the things was I was getting burnt out on is the way that staff was getting trained, but then also that rolls into communications with clients, right? So we have to train our clients to be receptive to that as well. And that takes time. So getting people used to the fact that they can't just call and expect to talk to me right away. And that was a major problem that I had, is that I had catered a lot to people's needs, and it was not coming from a bad place from them, but they had kind of gotten trained for a little while that like I was going to help them and talk to them no matter what. And they'd be like, Dr. Reverend's in an appointment with another client who's actually here. And so it's just good communication all around, I think.
Yeah. I definitely experienced that starting a solo equine practice. I'm like, oh, I'm available for everything all the time. And it wasn't really till I had kids probably that I then had to get some boundaries up, because it just like wasn't physically possible. And it's a little sad that it took that for me to realize that, because that is the start of how you get really burnt out and sick of talking to people, when you allow that to happen all the time at any hour.
I also felt like, you know, and going back to my issue of like all these assumptions in your head, we're trained to like attack medicine from a medical perspective, obviously, because that's what we do. We're doctors. But there's a lot from a client perspective, there's a lot that goes into choices about animal care that come from an emotional place and come from a quality of life. This is my relationship with my pet place. And that part of communication training, like I could talk to people all day about like, here's what your blood work said and chronic kidney disease and like whatever. But it took me a long time to realize that I would be far more efficient, a better doctor in the eyes of my clients, and be able to help pets better if I took the time to talk to people about the emotional component and ask the questions, what does success look like for you today? What are your main goals that you would like to achieve with your pet? What are you afraid could happen? Those aren't conversations we commonly have in an exam room. And it took me a long time. Like I would come out of the room and I'd say to my technician, like, I just wish I could ask them, what are they worried about? Like, I'd feel like we're not on the same page. And they're like,
just
ask. Why don't you ask them?
Like, yeah, that's really, I mean, it's a good point though.
And especially in ER medicine, where like we have to make decisions quickly, bills escalate very quickly. It's become a really important tool for me in communicating with my clients to be like, look, I just want to, and I literally will say, I want to make sure we're all on the same page. I want to be completely transparent. What are your expectations today? What are your goals? What is considered a successful outcome? They say whatever they're going to say. Sometimes I have to tell them like, that's not a realistic expectation, right? And then that helps us pivot to like, come out of the clouds and here's what's actually happening with your pet.
But it's also really important to do that for their expectation in the end, or that like, that's why your reviews are XYZ at the end, because no one told them that would never be an option.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so I think being more transparent and literally saying, I want to set expectations for this visit, setting client expectations by saying, I'm setting client expectations. I was like, really? You can be that transparent about it? Like, but yeah, I will do that. And like, and when I was in GP, I used to tell people like, I am off. I'm out of office for the next 2 days. It's my weekend, Thursday and Friday. So I will call you Saturday morning when I'm back and can review these lab results with you, so that people knew like, don't expect to hear from me because I'm not here, which saved a lot of grief for the support team fielding conversations where they would basically call in and say, hey, is that lab work back yet? And the technician would be like, yes, but unfortunately, Dr. Bowden can't talk to you about it. And they're mad that it's like there and sitting there, but they can't know what it is.
Yeah, I've found that in my practice is that we often think that their expectations are higher of us than they actually are. And when I say like, you know, yeah, I'm not going to get to that blood work until after I pick up my kid, and then I'll look at it and then I'll call you. It, people are generally fine if they know a plan, timeline, or like, oh my gosh, I had a major emergency. I am not getting to that today. Yeah. And people are generally pretty understanding. Yeah. But I think that's a really good point about being super clear with them.
Yeah, it's the anxiety of waiting that makes clients anxious and then get frustrated. Mm-hmm. More so than the actual time that lapses. Like if they know like, okay, just don't even worry about this for 24 hours because you're not going to hear from me till tomorrow, they let that go. But if they're like, I was told I was getting a phone call later today And later today to them meant 3 p.m. in their brain. And later today for you meant like 8 p.m. when I'm doing my records. Now we have a problem.
I often had a lot of surprise clients. I'd call them maybe like 7:30. I'm like, I probably should set a limit on like when's appropriate to be bothering people. But I would call it and be like 7:45. And they'd be like, oh man, late night for you. And I'd be like, nope, just another day. We closed 2 hours ago. It's fine.
Yeah. Speaking of training clients, I did stop responding to people late at night because then they would think it was okay to contact me. And I'm like, oh, I can't be encouraging this. Or like the 6 a.m. text when they like first walk out to the barn. And I'm like, ah, I'm going to let that one sit till 8:30 when that's a more appropriate time. And
when my like, office is open.
Yeah, right. So I think it's really cool that you guys have both experienced ups and downs already throughout your career. But I get the sense that you both really love being veterinarians. Is that correct?
Oh, 100%.
I think we both just, we both nodded and then realized that this
no one can see you.
And I was always just like dead silent. Yes, I think we do. I think we both very much enjoy it. But I think that one of the things that, and I don't want to put words in Mel's mouth, but I'm going to, I think one of the things that we both really enjoy about being veterinarians is that we have figured out how to make it work for us. And have gotten comfortable with not necessarily having like the totally conventional paths because we're both doing a lot of non-clinical work now.
Yeah.
But I think that that's made us even happier with our careers as opposed to leaving, which a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say that you and I were at one point both close to considering just leaving. And I mean, like we both went through a period of time where like, I just need a break. I mean, you took a 3-month sabbatical in the fall and I went to relief and was like, I'm only going to work at literally minimum that I need to pay my bills and not doing it. And, but I think both of us, like Kirsten saying, like we figured out how to build a better relationship with our industry. And both of us, I think today sitting here would say like, there's nothing else I'd rather do. And I love how adaptable our industry is and that we have the opportunity to do that because a lot of professions that people go into with really advanced training, it's a pretty narrow wedge. And so I feel really lucky that veterinary medicine allows us to interact with it in so many different ways. And yeah, I'm like super happy. And I feel like Kirsten and I are both entering a new thriving phase.
That's awesome. That's great. Okay. So I also know that you guys want to share this experience and knowledge with other people. So you have created the Advanced Veterinary Academy. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah. So Mel came to me at the beginning of the year and said, I've been thinking about some things. And I was like, do I need to pour a glass of wine for this? Like, what's going on? So we sat down and she kind of put some things on the table to me and said like, what do you think about this? And I said, this is exactly what I wanted to do with Vet Redefined. When I started Vet Redefined as a platform and a way to connect with the veterinary community in 2019, that's when I first picked a name, made my Instagram account. And I was like, yeah, like, woo, life. This is exactly what I wanted to do with Vet Redefined. But I just didn't have the wherewithal. And like, I just needed like somebody else to help kind of like light a fire under my butt and figure out like how to provide the mentorship and the education to people. Because that's when I figured out that that really teaching is what I love to do. I literally sat to Melanie and I was like, and I kept like finishing your sentences. And I was like, yeah, that. And she was like, yeah, that's what I was going to say. And I was like, oh my God, Mel, this is it. So basically what it came down to was we were like, how do we take all of these things that we have worked so hard to cultivate and open that up to educating? I think the word mentoring, Mel and I think we kind of have a love-hate relationship with that word. Cause we're like, what does that actually mean? Cause it looks different to everyone. And so we kind of said, this is a way that we can take what we've worked so hard to build and then help apply that to clinical students, new graduates. And then I don't even think it's necessarily limited to that. I mean, it's people who are kind of getting ready to enter the first stages of their career, but even people who have been out for a year or two, I feel like it could still benefit them. I mean, I think ideally we're kind of going, hey, here's the things that we feel like we would have been really benefited by knowing earlier on. And it doesn't have to be a struggle to get there.
Yeah. You don't got to reinvent the wheel.
And like I said, we know that like, we're not going to jive with every single person we ever meet, but how do we really impact the people that, I don't know how else to say it, like us and, you know, want to learn from us and the people like spending time with. So that's how Advanced Vets Academy was born. That's how we kind of like put it together. And our goal is that it's actually going to be a year long course that has lots of material to work through, not like an overwhelming amount, but just lots of resources for people. And each month has a theme. So each month there's a mix of soft skills and medical stuff. So it's not just like, we're just going to talk about communication, or we're just going to talk about cats that throw up a lot. Like, we're going to talk about those things, but it's going to be a really good variety of stuff that we feel like is things that would really benefit people early on in their careers. A little bit of business, a little bit of finances, a little bit of imposter syndrome. We may or may not have some really cool guest lecturers that are going to be taking part.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is my jam. I love all that. So like, what does it specifically look like for someone who would get involved?
Yeah. So the idea is for this to kind of be a professional coaching 12-month program, but also to create a community of veterinarians who want to take their practice and their happiness to the next level. So it's a combination of both. How do we work on that work-life integration to improve efficiency, to improve client communication, so you're getting to do more of the advanced procedures that you love to do, or, you know, get better at the stuff that you're fearful of, but also with the goal of being able to prioritize your private and personal time and like getting out on time and those kinds of things too. And those are soft skills of like, how do I be efficient and get through stuff? Specifically for people that want to learn more and sign up and things like that, enrollment will be happening May and June. And the goal is to launch the first class of students June 15th. And again, it'll go through a full year. And the concept is, like Kirsten was saying, each month kind of has a theme of content, but then also having opportunities to connect with other veterinarians, kind of going through a lot of the same stuff, and provide space for people able to just talk to each other about like challenges that they're having in practice, problem solving group, you know, stuff like that as well.
That's great. Yeah. I can't imagine it's not going to be a huge success with as passionate and excited as you both are about it. I think it's super exciting. I can't wait to hear how it goes.
We hope so. I mean, we like get super excited about it. Every time we talk about it, we're like, woo, like, okay, what do you want to do about this? What do you want to do about this? And so I think that just our enthusiasm, I hope our enthusiasm alone tells you that we're, I think we like to help people. Like we like to teach, we like to educate, like Mel said, people who want to kind of elevate where they're at and where they're going, and people who really want to take control of like making their career work for them. Which has been so important to both of us, but also just doing it in a digestible way. I feel like there's a lot of ways people can get more information these days. And, you know, there's tons of stuff out there online and groups and things like that. And they're all great. And everybody needs something a little bit different. And, you know, we want to help the people who, like I said, like jive with us and want to learn and want to build. And I think that the way that we've structured it is going to make it very easily digestible for people. So like, yes, there's going to be one live webinar each month. Yes, there's going to be small group discussions each month. There's going to be some opportunities for goal setting and extra information and kind of some like work through some cases and things like that. So it's a little bit of everything. And so it's enough that people feel like they're really getting a lot out of it without feeling overwhelmed. Because a lot of people are going to be like just starting a new job or like getting into their career. And so we wanted to kind of strike that balance of like, how do we provide that so that people really enjoy it and really can make use of it, but they don't feel like it's like going back and sitting in a classroom for 8 hours a day.
No, I think that sounds like a great goal to hit that balance. And I think you're right. Like with any project, if there's enough enthusiasm behind it, people can tell and it always works out.
Yeah.
If I've learned anything from this podcast project is that you just have to be kind of enthusiastic about it and then good things will come out of it. Dr. Bowden, you also have a book coming out. Tell us briefly about that.
I do. Going back to your explicit podcast, it's What the F is this Vet Med? So I guess it's good that people know up front that Kirsten and I can be explicit if they're joining our class.
Yes, probably don't sign up if you're a friend.
But so the book's coming out. First edition publishing's happening currently, and I used a Kickstarter campaign to be able to fund that. So those individuals who supported that will be getting their first editions in the next couple weeks, and then it'll be available publicly on e-readers through like Amazon and Barnes and Noble, probably late May, but as of June 1st for sure. So people that are interested in kind of finding out more information or learning more about Kirsten and my coaching style, Kirsten was an early reader of the book and helped me kind of organize it. She also has a little segment in it as like a mentor. So if you're interested in learning more about kind of our coaching style and our thought on industry issues and things like that, feel free to read it. I hope you enjoy it.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. You guys are putting so much good work out into the world for us veterinarians. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We love to do it. We think we're funny, but I don't know if that's good or bad, but we enjoy it. We sure as heck enjoy doing it. That is definitely true.
Okay. If you had one quick resource that's not your stuff that you would tell everyone should read the book, obviously, but another resource, book, podcast, person to follow, what would you tell any veterinarian that they have to do?
Whoa. That's a big one. Do you want to go first, Mel?
Sure, I can go. So I'm a huge book nerd and I love reading like cross-industry stuff. I'm a huge fan of Atul Gawande. He's a human medical surgeon. He did Checklist Manifesto, which I loved. But the one that I really love is Being Mortal, which is about making medical mistakes. It's part of where I got the client education tip on like, what are you afraid of? And having those conversations. So anybody who has a fear out there of like, imposter syndrome, or what if I do something and I'm liable for it, or I actually like made a mistake and I'm wrong. It's a very honest, candid, easy digestible, easy read book that talks about all those things. And I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. I don't know that one. Yeah. So now I'm going to check that out. Okay. Kirsten.
Well, I guess I'll go on with like the book theme. I also very much like reading. Mel like makes me stay on track with like some serious ones sometimes, but I really like personal development books. So if I'm not reading, I'm either listening to a podcast about murder, or I'm like reading a book about like how to make myself a better person, like personal development. So it's either like true crime or like, you can do it if you set your mind to it. I really love anything that comes from Brené Brown. And I know she was, I think kind of got really popular in the veterinary world over the last few years, but The Power of Vulnerability is wonderful. I think it's just, I don't know if it's written down. She might just have it as an audiobook, but she has this like 8 or 10 hour recording that you can get off like Audible. And it goes through all of her research on vulnerability. And it's just really interesting. Plus just anything written by her, I think is absolutely fantastic.
Totally love Brené.
Yeah. She's like, no bullshit. Oh, shoot. You're gonna have to, I was so close.
Oh, so close.
She's like no BS. And I really appreciate that about her. And the other one that I really, really liked. Yeah. You Are a Badass. Is that what it's called? By Jen Sincero.
Jen Sincero.
Loved that one. I know that that's another popular one.
Marie Forleo's Everything is Figureoutable.
Yes.
I haven't read that one. I started following her podcast, but yeah.
He's good. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Marie Forleo is wonderful. And I downloaded that and listened to it as an audiobook. And I like definitely got into the audiobook thing because I commuted. I've always commuted really far to work. So until now, which is kind of nice. I've been doing a lot from home. But yeah. So put on those audiobooks and listen to them in the car.
Yeah. It's Marie great. Introduced me to, I'm sorry, I call authors by their first names because once I read their books, we're friends.
Yeah, sure.
And but Marie introduced me to The Power of Positive Quitting. And that is the reason why I let go of the position I had, even though it was like what I'd worked, or I thought I'd been working my entire career for, was to become medical director of a practice and be participating in ownership. And I read her book and was like, this is an opportunity that I've invested in a lot, but I'm putting good after bad and it's time to let it go. We've outgrown it. So
yeah, all this stuff is like exactly why I created this podcast. Because I just feel like we don't get any of it. I've said this before, but I didn't even know personal development was like a topic of books. Like, and I just feel like all of us have these, you know, perfectionist, type A, like all these tendencies that are not so healthy. And there's just this giant world out there that we can better ourselves and be more sustainable vets. And yeah, so I love all those suggestions. One question that I ask all of my guests is, what is one small thing that has brought you joy this past week?
Well, I have a new puppy and
it's not that he pooped all over the house. That's not your joy.
No, I did share that story before the podcast started recording and that was not something that brought me joy. But so this past weekend at the ER was kind of rough. I euthanized 18 animals in 3 days. And so a moment of joy for me was being able to go upstairs during my work break because we have an upstairs kennel room for dogs and to be able to just like sit with them on the futon for a little bit and listen to some music and chill out with them and just appreciate my little furry creatures. And that was like a little moment of peace for me that I took yesterday as like a 5 minute, I need to get off the floor moment. So
oh, I'm glad you got that. That is a rough weekend.
Yeah,
I'm like, and on that note, because right I'm, I should have gone first.
And chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate.
Yeah,
chocolate's always joyful.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, I finally committed and bit the bullet, and I worked my patootie off for some extra cash. And Andrew and I just bought a new desktop computer, and I'm super excited about it. And I used it to talk to people for many, many hours yesterday. And it just made me so happy. I talked to my best friend back at home in Seattle for an hour and a half. And then I was like, it's 9:30 in the morning for you. You probably should go to work. And she's like, yeah, probs. And I talked to my sister for a while. And then I called my grandma and I talked to her for about half an hour. And so it was really nice. Andrew's like, you're in such a good mood. I think it's because you actually took time to talk to your family that is now many, many thousands of miles away from us. So that definitely put me in a good mood for sure.
Yeah. It is amazing what connecting with good friends or family does for the day. Yeah. I agree.
And this too.
Yes.
Yeah, this is joyful. Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys so much for being here. Where can people find out more about you and more about the Academy? Tell me all the places.
Yeah. So for me, you can always email, direct message, Instagram, all the things. So at vet_redefined on Instagram, and then, or my own personal website is www.vetredefined.com. And my email is also on there. You can contact me through that. And then also almost done, should be done by the time this comes out, so people can actually check, but working on advancedvetsacademy.com. So there will be a website for the course and everything itself, but you'll also be able to get my communications course and Mel's book through that as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm at True North DVM on Instagram and Facebook. And then I also have a website, truenorthdvm.com. And you can email me through that. My direct email is drmelaniebowden@gmail.com. So
perfect.
Happy to always continue the conversation.
I will link all of that and all the recommended books and everything in the show notes. And again, thank you for chatting. This was really fun. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for having us. So much fun. So nice to just BS and relax for sure.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been a blast.
Thank you. Thank you to Drs. Bowden and Rundgren. They were so open and honest and enthusiastic. I had such a wonderful time speaking with them. I hope you will check out their new endeavor, Advanced Vets Academy, because it sounds amazing. Thanks as always for the time you share with me. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, please go check me out on Instagram at The Whole Veterinarian and go to thewholeveterinarian.com/subscribe to sign up for the monthly newsletter. Have a great week, and I hope you find some small moments of joy. I'll talk to you soon.